What's your dream? What's your dream? Peace to the people. Welcome back. You're on the move with Mike Africa Jr. And this is my podcast where we illuminate the struggles of the people, inform the uninformed, and give you nothing but the truth. On the Move is here to disrupt the system and spark a global revolutionary change. A change is what we need. Like Sam Cooke said, a change is going to come. But like Gandhi said, you got to be the change you want to see in the world. And even though Gandhi wasn't perfect, he said something that was true. And when the power of truth is present, you better respect it. So check this out. A couple of weeks ago, my parents were here and we got the news about Russell Maroon Schultz being released from prison on compassionate release. Now, we went into how happy that made us, and for a lot of reasons, and one of which being that I and my dad has been very close with the Schultz family, especially to this brother that I have here with me today, Russell Schultz the Third. How you feel today, bro?
Great, great. I feel great. How about you?
I feel great. Listen, man, I'm really excited to have you here with me today, and we're going to get into a lot of things. But before we get into the heavy parts of things, right, we got this thing that we call Gimme Two. Okay. Right? Activists are multifaceted, and oftentimes people don't think of us as doing anything other than rallying and protesting, right? But Gimme Two is a way to spotlight the other good things that we got going on in our lives. You know what I mean? So I want us to share two good things that's happening in your life right now. And while you're thinking about that, I'll give you two from me. I got a chance to talk to my dad. And we were talking about like our family and my aunt, who has been like a cornerstone in our family. And as long as I've been alive, she's been there to help. And I don't know, with all of these times and things that's going on, family is important. And cherishing the good people that you have in your family is just really, really important for me. And that was one thing. So shout out to my Aunt Need if you're listening. The other thing that I had going on is my son, my 17-year-old son, Tum Tum, he's been working out lately. I don't know what got into him. I mean, I like to think that my example inspires him. But he's been working out lately, and man, this kid is just getting jacked. And I like seeing it because the confidence that's growing in him, and like now he's walking around with these like open, he's walking around with his shirt open. Right, yeah. You know what I mean? He's buying shirts and clothes that like accentuates.
Actually, yeah.
So it's just really cool to see him coming into his own and spreading his wings in that way. So what you got? What you got going on?
You know, with my father coming home, there's probably like, you know, 22, you know, things that are, you know, great and wonderful. I think that just the knowledge and information and also the energy and people's just willingness to double down and commit more after my dad's victory is one thing. Just people's commitment, level of commitment, people being excited about the victory enough to kind of commit to some other campaign or struggle. I'm very, you know, excited and happy and cool with that. Another thing is just family, you know.
Mm-hmm.
People coming together from all over to see their loved one, to thank them, to just be there and make prayer and, you know, just,
yeah,
you know, be family in a way that was not possible, you know, behind bars.
You know, I saw the GoFundMe that your sister posted, right?
Mm-hmm.
For some of the grandkids to come and be able to come and see their grandfather,
mm-hmm.
right? And like when I saw it, I thought it was a really special thing because his release is bringing so many people together that he hasn't seen in a long time. And probably, you know, when you start bringing the cousins in from different places, it's like you're seeing people that you haven't seen for a long time too, I imagine, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So like, it's really good to see people come together like that around somebody who really needs it, but also really deserves it too.
Yeah.
So as I mentioned earlier, your pops Russell Maroon shows he was granted compassionate release from prison. For a lot of people who are listening who probably don't really understand his story, can you give us like a rundown on your dad and how he ended up spending nearly 50 years in prison?
Yeah, so basically my dad is just one person in a larger case known as the Philadelphia Five, basically where a young man was gunned down in front of his mother in West Philadelphia back in the 70s. And this youngster had stolen a car and was joyriding and was chased by the cops into the back of his mom's house, through the alley in the back of his mom's house, and then shot in front of his mother. Mm. Then the mother was in her kitchen and I guess got a kitchen knife and started trying to stab the police.
Oh.
They beat her down and dragged her out.
The police beat her down?
Yeah. Mm. And then dragged the boy out. And obviously the community witnessed this, and so they were demanding that something be done. So my dad and, you know, his friends went and retaliated on the police station, not directly that direct officers or what have you, but just in general, because this was just a straw that broke the camel's back in this, you know, Rizzo era of heightened police repression and brutality. After that retaliation, my dad went on a run, was caught a year or so later, and spent, you know, the next 50 years incarcerated, but earlier years were a lot of escapes. And then after escaping a bunch in the earlier years, more than twice, he was put in solitary confinement, denied general population, and their reasoning was he was an escape risk. And so at some point, he would be approached by another prisoner after returning from an escape, and the person said, oh, they were chasing you like a maroon. And so he was like, what was that? And so they gave him the history on maroons. And from that point on, kind of sort of that moniker had stuck to him. And, you know, he always admired the slaves that ran away or tried to build separate community or quilombos or the nanny grannies mm-hmm. or the Harriet Tubmans of the world were people who gave him inspiration to kind of continue on. But that's like, I guess.
There's a lot of information that you packed into that summary, mm-hmm. right? One of the things you said, escaped, right? And there's multiple escape, not attempts, but actual escaping from prison, a successful escapes. I wanted to know for the people who may not know, was he a part of any group or organization?
So he was definitely originally a part of BUC or the Black Unity Council, which at some point merged with the Black Panther Party because the Black Panther Party knew that the Black Unity Council had already had run-ins military-wise with police and things like that. And just the Panthers in Philly at that time didn't have any training, any military training. And so the Black Unity Council, which was my dad and, you know, my aunts and a bunch of people out of West Philly, joined with the Panthers in North Philly as they were being raided and stripped, you know, stripped in the streets and things like that. It was important that they come together because of that threat to everybody. But originally my dad was Black Unity Council, then he became a Black Panther as they merged, and then later on Black Liberation Army.
Wow. And it sounds like it wasn't just him and your family that was active in the community trying to make a change. And the Rizzo administration was really hard on Black people in the city of Philadelphia. I mean, there are so many issues and incidents with Rizzo and the way he led the city as the mayor, as a police commissioner, because before he was the mayor, he was the police commissioner. And that incident where you talk about where Black Panthers were stripped in the middle of the night by the police, that was Rizzo's doing. And he wasn't, I don't even think he was the mayor when he did that.
Right.
I know that we're never going to be able to like talk about all of these amazing things that your father did just in this one episode. So we definitely want to, like, you know, keep the ball rolling to, like, start talking about some of these other things and open up so that people know who your father is. And also so that it sheds light on who you are and the work that I've seen you do. We've known each other since we were young kids, right? I was a teenager when I first met you on Catherine Street. Back in the 90s. So there's a lot of information here. One of the things that I wanted to know too, when your father was released, what was your feeling? How did you feel?
It was weird. It was surreal. It was exciting. It was numbing. It was, you know, it was a lot of different things, a lot of different emotions and feelings. But, you know, most of all, it was just a release, you know, and a relief. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just both. You know, I was relieved that, you know, he was going to be able to come home, and I was able to release, you know, all of that, you know, years of pressure of just trying to keep the pressure on and trying to bring him home, you know. So that was the feeling, you know, initially, and that release is still releasing.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And the relief is the relief.
How old were you when he went away?
I was 3.
3 years old. Do you remember him outside of prison before that?
No.
Mm. You know, you mentioned relief. One of the things that brought you and I together was our fathers, both being incarcerated and political prisoners. I remember what it was like when my dad came home. And I remember talking to you when my dad came home, you know, and just hearing you say relief, it just made me remember that. I guess it brings me to this next question. That's a hard question for me to even ask.
Okay.
I remember my dad when he was in his 20s and 30s. And I remember receiving trophies from him playing basketball and running and softball and boxing. I got tons of trophies of him and his accomplishments when he was young. And to see him come home with just about all gray hair, it's hard, mostly hard for me, because I know how he feels about what he was doing and how much he loved physical activity. So the question that I have for you on that is, how is your dad doing?
He's definitely not in his best, you know, stage or condition or evolution of life. But I know for a fact that, you know, it would be worse to be going through what he's going through, you know, in a jail cell or behind prison walls. Mm. So in that context, it's a kind of, you know, give and take. But for sure, you know, 110 better. You know, it's you know, a lot of things have happened, Mike, you know, from his release. Obviously, that we always use this euphemism, or not always, but we have, and you've heard it and I've heard it, because we've just gone all the way back. But now it's kind of surreal and landing on me differently now, the concept of us being in a minimum security prison and they were just in the maximum. Mm. So he just got released out of the maximum.
Into the minimum. Yeah.
You know.
No doubt.
It's just a
different level of prison.
But, you know.
Right. No, I got you,
still,
bro.
You know. We don't want you in maximum.
Right.
You know.
Right. Going into population is different than going in being in the hole.
Right.
And being on the street and the restrictions of this street life and the police and the rules and all of that is definitely different than being inside the actual prison cell.
Exactly.
But that doesn't mean that we're free. Right. And that's why, you know, I'm always conscious about making sure that when I do these conversations with people, I don't say, I'm conscious. I'm trying to be very careful of not saying free.
Oh.
He's released. But that doesn't mean that he's free.
But freedom is a whole nother conversation.
It's a whole nother conversation.
It's a whole different conversation, you know. And it's a mental conversation.
Mm-hmm.
It's a individualized conversation. mm-hmm. because your freedom and my freedom are two different things, or right. could be.
Could be two different things. Could be the way you.
Totally two different things. Yeah. Yeah. How I perceive it, what uh-huh. I think it is, how I may define it, you know, what lives there in that free space, you know, what it looks like, you know. But yeah, I think one of the things though that intersects that whole freedom part, when I think freedom, I think about when your parents were released.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I can't even still to this day, I can't, for whatever reasons with them, I can't really wrap my head around it even still. So like even
that
when
they were released?
Yeah.
Bro,
it's kind of weird.
It's no, but see, I know exactly what you mean, because that's how I feel with you.
Oh, wow.
It's not like it didn't happen, but it's just we've been fighting for a long time.
Right. We was fighting for a long time, and so I can understand how you feel, right?
It doesn't feel real.
Right, no, I can understand how you feel, right? But when your parents came home, it was one at a time, obviously.
Uh-huh.
But then the one, and I was like, all right, whatever, cool, that's cool. You know, but then the other one, I was like, oh shit. I was like, oh, this is some, I was like, oh snap. Right. And so, but I was feeling like I was naturally high, you know, I was over here
right.
chilling, doing whatever, kicking it, whatever, grubbing, whatever. But there was a lot there in that package of not just them coming, but I, you know, like your mom, not so much, but I knew your dad.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, like I knew your dad.
Right.
You know, like I would see him. I would see him.
Right.
I would see him
right.
in the visiting room.
Right.
Like, you know, all the time I would see him.
Right.
You know, and so, and we would kick it. I would talk to him, whatever, whatever.
The first time that he told me he met you, he said, hey, he said, you know Maroon's son? I said, yeah. He said, he asked you, did you know me? My father, when you were visiting your dad in prison.
And he said,
he asked you, my dad asked you, did you know me?
Right.
And he said, you looked at him and was like, what?
Right.
Me and Mike are like this. Right, like, right. Do I know him?
Right.
Not only do I know him,
right.
You know, and
we super tight. Yeah.
Yeah. And I met your dad in prison one day. Well, a couple times, but this one particular day I was leaving early. His visit left. His lawyer or whoever, I think maybe Brett was there or somebody.
Mm.
And so he was still sitting there waiting to be processed back into the prison. So I said, hey, I'm about to get my dad some food. You want something? And he said, yeah, give me a bag of potato chips. I said, you don't want a sandwich or something? He said, give me two bags of potato chips. He didn't want it, you know. So I was just like, I said, okay. And dad said, yeah, he's, you know, that's how he rolled. So I was like, okay, that was, you know, I got him two bags of potato chips.
Yeah. It's a very interesting kind of twist with us, you know, coming of age or us growing together and our peoples being released, right?
Yeah.
So just to be 110% transparent, blunt, clear, I don't really care about what you or your dad or mom think, you know, but when they got released, kind of, sort of, and I knew it was a lot. I knew it was a lot, right? But in my head, you know, I was like, they my parents too. I was like,
wow.
I was like, I'm muscling in somehow. I was like, they don't know, but like, I'm
they don't know.
I'm in too. Like, I'm in.
Wow.
I'm super in, and I know it's a line, because you know I was right there.
Yeah, you were. Yeah.
So I could see the line.
Yeah.
All the way down to like grandkids, right?
Right.
I know I'm behind them, right? But I'm like, you know,
bro.
And yeah, it was just a lot. It was a lot.
Yeah, man. And when you came to the house and when we were eating together and like you made the pie for them, you know what I mean? Bro, I felt like, you know, I know that people came home long after they should have, right? But the fact that they got home, like you said earlier, man, it's better to be home than to be in that jail cell.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, when we were talking earlier before we started recording, when we were on the phone together, we were talking about individuality and movements, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how, like, there's a problem in communities where like there's this individual approach to people when it comes to their families and their movements. And I think one of the things that we've always been able to do is put our movements together because they are together, and recognize that and work together to help each other and support each other and love one another, and we're there for each other.
Yeah, but you have to be honest. I have to be honest and transparent in saying that because of our relationship, you know, because, you know, like you're saying, we tight or whatever, whatever, a lot of times that help just smooth little gaps or little situation scenarios that in other situations, it probably wouldn't have went that smooth, you know, or our relationship just helped to, like, even this, you know, like you call me, you want to do podcasts, blah, blah, blah. It's not like a whole bunch of, you know, it's just a straight, whatever it is. Either I could do it, I can't do it, blah, blah, blah. But there's no whole bunch of side byproduct to our relationship. But also that goes back. And when I think about, you know, the movement work, all of the schisms, all of the, you know, pros and cons that come with just life in general, not just movement work. You know, I think that we have been very fortunate to see each other work together, see each other's parents come home, all of those things. But that individuality, we had that, and then we would come back together at different points in times and be like, I'd be like, Mike, do this for me.
We were never too far apart.
Right,
from
I'd be
each
like,
other.
Mike, do this. Yeah. I need this.
Yeah. Blah, blah. I used to get blue magazines from you.
Right. All of that. You know, and I would get, you know, rhymes from y'all, you know, Season of Wisdom or whatever it may be.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and that was a way also of me, and this was, you know, this was very interesting too, you know, dynamic. But, you know, I knew Ramona, I knew Pam, you know, I knew, you know, I knew whoever, right? But generationally and also just relationship wise, I would probably go to you and be like, yo, I'm doing this show in New York or whatever, Or yo, I'm doing this, or yo, I got this magazine, or yo, blah, blah, blah. Yes. And I would still come at you and be like, get Ramona or get Pam or get there or do this or do that, you know, whatever. But that was just how I felt comfortable entry wise, but I do know that everybody didn't have that, obviously. You know, I know that other people were, again, working on their dolo, on their people's cases. You know, I know that outside of the political prisoner and social conscious realm of prisoners, there's just people that just in prison for whatever. I did it. I was wrong or whatever, whatever. And that's another echelon of folks who want to have relations with us, who want to engage, who want to learn, who want to strategize, who want to bring their people home, you know, and we're separated once again.
Right.
You know, and so.
And for whatever reason.
And for whatever. Like, and it's not a right or wrong reason.
No, you're right. Because one of the things that worked out for us in the beginning, especially, is because we lived right around the corner from each other close proximity. And then when Pam said, this is Russell Schultz III and this is Sharon. And I was like, really? Like, they live here? Like, you're like my big brother. Sharon and Teresa are like my big sisters in the movement, right? So when I heard y'all names, I didn't think that y'all were people that I could actually reach.
Right.
It's kind of like celebrityism.
Right.
Right. I don't think that I could talk to certain people.
Right.
So when I heard y'all name and y'all standing on the steps, I'm like, they can't be those people.
Well, I felt that same way about, you know, like Pam or Ramona or, you know, certain people in. Or your dad, for sure. Like, until I met your dad.
I mean, that's how I felt about your dad.
Right.
I don't know why it is this thing where I guess I just assume that people that I look up to that way, I guess I kind of feel like they would be snobbish. Because they actually could, and I still would be respectful of them because they've been through whatever they've been through.
Right.
And they legends.
Right.
So when your pop was just like, yeah, give me a bag of chips. I was like, you don't want like a whole meal? Like, I'll give you a whole meal. I'll give you this card and whatever is on it.
Right.
You know, he was like, okay, give me two bags of chips. I'm like, okay, done.
Right.
That's easy.
Right.
You know, so I think it was the same way with y'all. Like, when I met you and like, yeah, we going up to New York to go do this concert. You want to go? I can go. You know what I mean? I don't know. That's just how I've been. Like, I just really appreciate it. I might feel a little bit. And then see, here's the other thing about it too. See, I'm much younger than y'all. Like, in terms of like the movement, like Mumia and my parents and them, they came in the late 70s.
Yeah, yeah.
So like, I remember one of the brothers, Salim, he was like, you know, when you talk about JoJo and Maroon, and Mumia was like a baby to them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so if Mumia was a baby to them, my parents were like babies to them. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So we like strive to be like these people that we are now sitting with.
I think, you know, we're so fortunate in Philly to have that, but also, again, that intersectional piece of all of these different layers that are not together, not in solidarity, and maybe in solidarity at different given points, but for the most part, we need to get to a point where we bring all of this energy together collectively.
We definitely need one hub, one place, one location, you know, and start taking the steps toward creating that so that there's one place where people can go in these movement spaces, and all of them, everybody's got to do their own individual thing,
right,
to some degree.
Right.
But there should be a hub,
a central location,
a centralized hub. Even if it's not a physical space, there's got to be some kind of way where we can come together and support each other.
One thing I want to say quickly is that I've learned a lot out of this experience. I'm sure you did too. And I want to share that, you know, and I also want to take that and give it to other folks so that they can liberate their folks.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And so I know you helped me a lot with questions after your dad got out and all of that, pick your brain and stuff like that. But I also want to allow folks to pick my brain. I want to talk about the case. I want to talk about the strategies. I want to talk about the individual campaign. I want to talk about the collective campaign.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to talk about the medical, the legal, the spiritual, you know, because moving forward, you know, for all of these PPs, you know,
mm-hmm.
for Imam, Jamil, you know, for
there's
for
a
Shakur,
lot
for, the, you know,
yeah,
for
yeah.
Sundiata, for all of them need all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you don't have a spiritual component, if you don't have a medical component and you only have a legal component, you're not complete in this process of trying to liberate the person. Right. If you got the spiritual component and you got the medical component, but you don't got the legal component,
right,
then, you know, we have to come in and get that legal component and then get those three working collectively. Well, I'm sorry, those four, the movement folks,
mm-hmm.
of course, but those, you know, those things need to be in place. And anything short of that is short of actually trying to, you know, shoot the best shot. You know, come with the proper leverage to bring our people home.
That's really important because you have to have all of those things in place in order to be complete, right?
Mm-hmm.
And working toward that and keeping that like front and center for the people that are coming into the movement and for the people that are in the movement, that having like people be prepared, having the prisoners be prepared, that's one thing that I realized when my parents came home, just how unprepared we were. We did the best that we could with what we knew, but we were so unprepared for that arrival.
That is really good. Because right now, the Shokes family is totally unprepared. You know, it's a lot. It's a lot.
Yeah,
it's a lot to be prepared.
Right.
It's a lot to be prepared.
There's no way that you
could know.
Because we've never had it before.
Right.
So you don't know what that's going to be.
You don't know what taking care of someone who's been incarcerated for 30 years is going to be like.
And
yeah, I mean, because each and every individual has a different experience they've been experienced for 30 years.
And then like I seen 10 or 15 or 20 MOVE members come home from prison, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they did 12 years, 17 years. They could still remember the L stops.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Because even though 12 years is a long time to be in prison, it ain't nothing like 40.
Right.
It ain't nothing like 50. You're a different person.
Right.
I mean, you go through some changes in 12 years, at 17, at 20 years.
Right.
But none of those are nothing like 40 and 50 years.
Yeah.
So we never seen that before. You can't prepare for that in a way.
Right.
Even, and you're right, people have different needs. So even if, you know, even if and when someone else comes home, their needs will be different and whatever medical they need or whatever. So yeah, there's a lot going on. Tell me something about your dad that people probably don't know.
Well, right now that he's a super staunch, devout Muslim and is very much just into his deen, very much into being as clean spiritually and otherwise as he can be, about as staunch with that as he was with most of his ideological, political beliefs and writings and stuff like that. So really super staunch, devout Muslim at this moment.
Is he a, what type of Muslim? Is it Sunni? Is it like, is it, I mean, I don't know.
No. He's a fundamental Muslim. He's not Sunni, but you know, coming out of the practices that you see in Philly, in reference to people who have studied a long time behind a wall.
Uh-huh.
You know, so it's a different type of Islam.
It's a different, yeah,
you
no
know,
doubt.
Like, so Islam in Philly is a different type of Islam than anywhere on the planet. But then Philly prison Islam is a whole nother level.
Different layers and different
it's
stuff.
It's different.
Right.
You know, it's a whole nother.
Okay, I got you. Level. I was just wondering if it was like, I don't know.
Of deaning, you know.
Is there something about him that had, I mean, I know that he's only been out for a short amount of time, but is there anything about him that you learned that you like didn't really expect or know or didn't prepare for or whatever?
Not really upon release, but prior to release.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you know, and with him going through these, you know, spiritual changes too. Like you say, we get older, we change, you know.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of people, because they aren't dealing with them or aren't seeing them or aren't whatever, like they have these expectations of him being like a certain type of person or him being the younger Maroon that, you know, was full of energy and energetic, you know, like he's the older, slower Maroon now.
Right.
You know, but I think people have these expectations that he's probably long abandoned because just, you know, you transition into these different spaces. Mm-hmm. And I know, and from my own experience, but he's been warehoused so long in prison that, you know, I'll never forget. They told him, we're going to have to operate. You know, you got cancer in your upper and lower and intestine, you know, and we have to take some out. We're going to take part of your upper intestine, we're going to take part of your lower intestine that has the cancerous, you know, tumors in it, and then we'll go from there. So at any rate, you know, they cut him from the rooter to the tooter. They cut him from like his chest all the way to his, below his scrotum or whatever, right?
Mm.
And took all his intestines, you know, whatever, cut out what they had to put it back together. But, you know, because he's been in jail so long, he never had an operation.
Mm.
You know, like I had quite a few operations.
Mm-hmm.
So we was kicking it just about that too. Let's be cool, whatever, don't worry.
Right.
You know, whatever,
right.
It's gonna be good. You know, but he came out that joint, he was like, man, I'll never be the same. And,
oh, wow.
And we are never the same once somebody cuts you open and lets some air up inside you and sew you back up on you. Not really the same. You know, I've had operations, you know, appendicitis, all kinds of stuff, and you're just not the same. Once somebody cuts you open, actually, with a really sharp, thin scalpel, that type thing, and dig inside you and do whatever, take the bullet out or whatever they do, you're actually not the same.
Mm.
Once your body is opened up, closed back up, sewed up, or whatever. It's not like a jacket or something. It's your body.
It's your body.
That's sewed back up.
That ain't supposed to be
cut open and opened up and sewed back up. And so I understood what he was saying, but at 70 and all of that, it's really different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Getting cut.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, if you're young and you're still growing and you got time.
Right. Yeah. They cut you.
But 70. Nah.
Come
that's
on,
different, bro. Different thing.
And that's your first cut? You know, and so those type of things. And, you know, I think that, you know, because of those, you know, traumas, those medical traumas, they drive, you know, medical traumas will get you tight spiritually.
Yeah.
The medical traumas will make you ask all of the universal questions.
Right.
You know, when you get like, I love Richard Pryor's stand up for that. You know, he's like rolling on fire, you know, like all of that. Yeah, because you get real mad, yeah, real with it. Because you get real when you,
right,
when you really in a traumatic space and, yeah, really AO,
right,
and really at your last situation or whatever. That's when you really be like, is
connected,
there a God?
Connected, you know, connected. Like, if there is a God that can help, right, you out of this situation, let's connect right now, right, and I'll be the best person, right, that this planet has ever seen before in your life.
That part,
I feel you, man. I feel you. Well, look, man, you know, there's a lot of work that has been done to get our parents home from prison, but there's still a lot that has to be done.
Right.
So what's next for you?
Well, it's, you know, like, I'm actually going to take some time with my family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm spending, you know, some amazing time and brought, you know, my son to see his grandfather and getting to, you know, that's opened up a whole, you know, situation for our relationship. Of course, my daughter is, you know, my daughter, but yeah, this has been a super, you know, learning experience, you know, and I'm vulnerable and open and really couldn't ask for more. But yeah, it's really been special.
That's what I would expect it to be. And I know there's vulnerability. You mentioned vulnerable, right? And I know that side. No, I don't know that side of it fully, or to the level that you're experiencing it. But I know that vulnerability plays a part in this process. Listen, man, before we go too far to wrapping up, is there anything that you want people to know? Is there anything you want to tell people about? Any kind of things you got going on? Is there any events that you want people to know about, to come out to? Is there going to be something for Maroon? Like, what's on the calendar?
Yes. So at some point, we're going to do a free Maroon, you know, release event specifically for Maroon. But it just so happens that the yearly event that we do for prisoners and political prisoners' families is upon us. It's actually this Sunday coming up. November 14th.
November 14th?
Yes, at One Art Community Center. That's 52nd and Media. And this yearly dinner, you know, we've been going to these type of dinners, you know, for years.
Right.
And it's a good concept in the context of bringing folks together who have some of the same similar issues with their families. And again, it addresses and attacks that separation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the dinner brings us all together under one roof. You know, we all know that we're all in the same pot.
Yes.
We having dinner together. We listening to speakers. We listening to entertainment. We get up and dance, shake our booty, have some dessert.
Nice.
You know, and get some information from, you know, the top organizations in the state, you know, the top lawyers, you know, the top activists, you know, the top freedom fighters, the top families that could help you with your loved one coming home. And that's the, you know, the annual prisoner family dinner. And again, that's November 14th at the One Art Community Center. And it's 12 to 4 this year. We're going to do it brunch style. So come out.
Is there an entry fee?
There is no entry fee ever for the dinner. It's free to the public.
But people should give generously.
Definitely.
Because this event, it helps with so many activities that we have going on for political prisoners. And so people should definitely give what you can to support the movement for political prisoners.
Definitely give what you can, because this dinner and this brunch, you know, helps to educate other families of other prisoners who may not be as fortunate as me and Mike and may not have the family members and the support and the solidarity that we had to bring their family members home. So this is a place where that could be created. So definitely please to donate. You could Cash App to Russell Shooks. That's Cash App or Cash Sign Russell Shooks.
Is it spelled with a Z or an S?
Z, it's not S.
Okay. It's a Z.
With Z.
I've seen S's.
Yes.
But it's
yes,
a Z. Yes, Russell sure. Cash App, Cash, the dollar sign thing, and Russell Schultz with a Z.
Z, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Definitely.
Cool.
And yes, you could also find, you know, more ways to donate on my dad's link tree. And like you mentioned earlier, there is a GoFundMe site.
Yes.
But for this event, definitely the Cash App and the flyer is out. The website is up, you know.
We'll be talking about that.
Yeah.
One more thing. How can people connect to you? Is there an Instagram? Is there a social media way that people can connect to Russell Schultz III?
Yes, yes. So I'm on most of the social media platforms. We have a YouTube page, a Facebook page, a Twitter, a Instagram. But I would say the Instagram and the Twitter are the easiest ways to connect. And also Facebook also, but the Instagram and Twitter handles all at Russell Shooks III. We're continuing the work. Like I said, I'm going to take a little break, but it's on to freeing our political
people. It's on. It don't change much.
Yeah.
It don't change much. All right, bro. That's a wrap, man. Thanks for coming in, man.
Thanks for having me.
It's good to see you as always. Appreciate you for getting on the move with me and listen. And for all of the people out there that's listening to On the Move with Mike Africa Jr., if you like what you heard, make sure you tell a friend, share the episode with your people, and make sure you're following the podcast so you never miss an episode drop. Till next week, peace out.